Do you know what bugs the shit out of me?
Tell me something. I'm sure there are a couple things.
There are a couple things, but this is the killer. Reach and not defining it as potential reach and assuming it's actualized reach destroys me. Okay, it destroys me.
It's garbage data in a lot of cases.
It's devastating. It completely takes common sense and a pulse of culture off the goddamn table. It kills me, and we talk about it as if it's true.
Attention is the number one asset.
Hey, Gary, I thought I saw you walk by.
I am here. Late, everybody. Let me apologize for us.
You don't need to apologize because you know what? I was giving a shout out.
Not to you, Andre, because I know we're family and I feel comfortable. I'm talking about Chris S. on LinkedIn and Jessica Knight on LinkedIn and Dane Weathers on LinkedIn and Cody Weaver on LinkedIn. So I just needed to apologize to them.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to just let you guys riff because Diana has a lot to share and we can't wait to hear it.
No pressure.
No pressure, Diana. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am well. It's nice. I've seen you three times now in the last like 6 weeks. This is exciting.
I know. And you know, we have a call later today too.
Amazing. So let's go right into it. Like knowing your background, being fond of your work, feel that you actually have, you know, for everybody who's watching, I do feel like the more senior you get in these big corporations, it becomes more challenging. I don't razz, I'm empathetic. It gets harder to be closer to the pulse, to the street. But I think you've done a really nice job watching you from afar. And so answer this question directly. Like, what do you think on this brand performance? Like, how do people balance brand building and performance from your perspective?
Yeah, I think, you know, not to be contrarian, I just have a different viewpoint on it. And I actually don't think these things are two separate things.
I don't either. When I heard you at the CMO summit and like notice balancing, like I believe balancing is could be looked at two different ways to your point. Opposites or actually the purple, the exit, huh?
So they complement each other. And if you really think about it, and what we try to do with the brands that I work on, the team that I have at Colgate Palmolive, like I have the privilege of leading what we call the consumer experience and growth team, which means nothing to anyone. But really what we've done is rethought about what marketing for the future for now in this complex consumer-driven environment really means. And so we put the consumer at the center of everything. So what does that mean? So my team has revenue growth management, insights, data and advanced analytics, but also some of those traditional CMO elements that you would think of when it comes to digital commerce or brand building or creative or social or just traditional media. And the reason why we did that is a consumer experience is just not about brand love. It's not about, you know, actually experiencing the product. It's not just about seeing an ad that you fall in love with. It really is the entire touch point. So from when I get the product to the zero moment of truth and I'm in the consideration all the way to the second moment of truth where I actually experience the product, which is really where you drive and build brands, all of those touch points matter and how we make that experience more exceptional and what are the jobs to be done so that we really build the brand. You know, at Colgate, we have brands that are 217-year-old, like Colgate Toothbrush, which you all know and love and have in your shelves. But we also have newer brands like Hello, which is a very designed forward brand, countertop friendly, but really thinks about the consumer experience at every single touch point. So a long way of saying, Every touch point in marketing is performance driving. Every touch point in marketing should be brand building. And if you don't think about it that way, then you're not thinking from a human or a consumer lens.
Why? Explain to all the people that are watching, because what normally happens is like, I'm looking at the chat right now. We're doing this on LinkedIn exclusively today. This is obviously going to be on my podcast. We're going to cut this up and chop this up and put it everywhere. Explain, you know, obviously the corporate people are going to understand this, but go down into the trenches of the audience I'm seeing here. Explain to people why corporations, because your statement makes so much sense. I came from small business and startup land. Why big market organizations, the Fortune 500s, why are they not consumer centric? Why are they academia centric or corporate centric?
I don't think the large, so my sweet spot is a 100, 200 year old company. That's where I come into play. And I don't think that they're not consumer centric. I think it's an end. They're consumer centric, but when you're a big ship and you've been around that long to be able to be around for another 200 years, you have to make sure that you're, you know, from a finance standpoint, that you have smart accounting principles, that legal is your best friend. When you're a larger brand, you become a legal target. So all of those things create another lever. I think it's how you think and approach them. So my best friends at work, my head of legal, my CFO, HR as well too, because you can't get the right talent for your roles without that. And I think right now, a lot of folks approach them, especially in marketing teams, as, oh, we got to get around legal, or, oh, you know, we got to try to convince the CFO that this is a good idea, rather than bringing them along for the journey. So at the end of the day, what does the CFO want? What do even I want? I want to get my bonus. We want to deliver a profit back to, you know, our investor community. Yeah. So how do we do that? Well, we create these brand experiences. So really being able to link and connect the two is important, and understanding the flexibility that we need in a P&L to be able to move at the speed of culture. You just have to bring your CFO folks along. And then legal plays such a critical role, especially in a social environment, wanting to be in the moment of culture, working with your legal partner so you can do it in a way that actually protects your brands and allows you to do things that are appropriate and don't open you up for litigation. So it's not that they're not brand obsessed. It's that the bigger you get, you know, they say more money, more problems. The bigger you get, the more that you have to be thoughtful about maintaining a position. And I would say the last thing that is really critical for larger companies that they have to work on, when you have a large company, it's just like being in a big family. You have workers in the factory, you have workers across multiple markets, and you want to make sure that you don't make decisions that risk their livelihood as well too. The stakes are higher.
Of course.
So that's really what's driving some of the extra layers that you have to maneuver through when you're in a bigger corporation.
The thing that I'm curious about from your perspective is the extra layers lead to less speed, right? Watered down. Those were not as big of an issue in a small, in a slower world.
Yes.
When your competitors were also spending 6 months to put out a commercial, you know, that's one thing. But obviously, for example, Colgate, we all know it, we all love it. Like, in there's been a lot of innovation in your space, and those smaller entrepreneurs with the, you know, the advantages of being able to be in retail or have the money to do media have changed a lot in a world where Shopify can represent, a Shopify store can represent the ability to reach consumers the way being in all the Walmarts used to, or that social can now represent what commercials did. What are, you know, knowing that you in that sweet spot have been around 200-year-old companies, what do you think the best big companies, what's the best behaviors that you've seen from big companies to actually get good at the nimbleness needed to be great at building brand and getting performance?
I tell this to my son, and it's the same thing I approach business with. You can't be a me too. You can't go after, hey, the small guys do it this way. No, you've got to own your own space. So we are typically in most categories, we in the incumbent. We do have smaller, disruptor brands that we're also building. But but specifically focus on those incumbent brands, leverage the scale. Those smaller brands, they would love the brand loyalty, the scale, the fact that, you know, Colgate itself is the number one household penetrated brand in the planet. Like, that's not a low-key brag. Those are just facts. And that's so great. Have that brand love to play with. So yes, can they move with speed in certain areas that I cannot? That is true. But what I have to work with from an already emotional connection with my consumer, advocacy and consumer love that, you know, when I have a brand like Fabuloso, before I can even put something on social, we had people dress up like Fabuloso for Halloween this year and send that to us. So there are intangible things that we have that are different, and you got to play to your strengths and your skill set. And if you try to focus on, hey, I need to operate like, you know, the startup brands, then you just look like the old dude in the club. Like, you really have to think about, okay, what is ownable for my brand? Where should I play? And then how, as the bigger brand, do I help grow the category itself? And I think if you understand your responsibilities as the larger incumbent brand and you play them well, I will tell you there's a lot of space in these categories. Consumers love choice, and you enable them to make the choice that is right for them. I think the other thing that large brands have, and especially that we have at Colgate, is the efficacy of our product delivering at the end of the game, the end of the course. And knowing that the biggest way to build brands is to have an incredible brand experience And to have that be science backed the way it is by us, knowing that every time the consumer is going to get that experience that they're looking for, that's when you really win or lose. So it's how you place those bets and investments. But no, I'm not going to be able to see something relevant in the culture and then post something 5 minutes later. But what we were able to do with the Met Gala, when we saw that the carpet looked like, you know, Colgate toothpaste, we were able to get something up and out the door in an hour, which is of
more than fast enough.
A company that, you know, we play with.
I love you. I hope you have a great day. Great end of the year. Have a good Thanksgiving. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Fantastic. We've got a new friend up next. Gary, you've got Janelle Tavis, who runs Bugaboo, which is one of my favorite brands in North America. And I didn't realize it's a Dutch-based brand.
Mm-hmm.
She's gonna lay it down for us, give us a little some global insights as well. Welcome, Janelle.
Amazing. Thank you for having me. This is actually our first time meeting, Gary. So it's such a treat to be here. Thank you.
I know the brand very well. When I had my first child, we were a heavy user. And my second. So I'm pretty pumped you're here. Why don't you tell the people that might not be in that life cycle about the brand for a minute or two, and then we'll get the jam. But thank you for being here.
Yeah, amazing. So I'll set the stage a little bit for sure. Before I came to Bugaboo, I actually spent nearly a decade at Nike. And I think whether you sell strollers or you sell sneakers, it was really interesting to hear you and Diana. But I think what the great brands actually really do is put the consumer at the center. And what we do at Bugaboo, that consumer is the new parent. So Bugaboo is a parenting solutions brand. And as you said, we're best known for our high performance and innovation strollers and European founded. So our design team and our innovation team actually sit out of the Netherlands. And I look after the US and Canadian business. So it's a real honor to be here. Thank you.
For everybody that doesn't know, and I'm a little bit removed, my kids are 14 and 11, but like, the high, like it's very real for the people that like drive luxury cars or, you know, like it is the Rolls Royce of strollers. And being a New York City parent, you need a really strong machine. And so talk to me about this. I'm actually genuinely curious about, because I think Diana's right about like performance and brand shouldn't be separate. It's more of the gray of the black and white, but most marketing organizations are structured with it being like brand over here, performance over here. How do y'all think about it? And what's your current state of the union on what you feel inside about the challenges or the opportunities in performance, the challenges and the opportunities in doing bigger brand work that creates affinity? And how do you think about this juxtaposition?
Yeah, such a good question. So again, I wanna pull us back. Because I think the first thing that any great brand should do, and what I would offer to the room of CEOs and founders and executives watching this today, is really just to first start off with putting your consumer in the center and understanding where's your consumer coming from, how are they finding you, and then also most importantly, where are the gaps? And then you can decide then whether or not you want to spend that dollar on a brand awareness building campaign or a performance campaign. So again, just to give you an actual example of how we see it at Bugaboo, as I mentioned before in the setup, Bugaboo is a Dutch design company on the other side of the pond in Europe, really strong brand awareness, deep roots. But then when you come over here to the US, right, we're actually seeing really incredible growth the last 3 years. But when we polled a room of 100 expecting parents, I mean, I'm so happy that you're familiar with the brand because it was actually single digit awareness. So what does that tell us?
Do you think, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah.
You know, on the awareness front, correct me if I'm wrong, it is a premium product, yes?
100%. Yes. It's a premium product that any parent can tell you. I mean, I'm also a New York mom, that you can really tell the difference in when you're pushing down, you know, the streets of the Upper West Side and it's pouring rain and you got to get to Zabar's and fill the undersea basket with groceries. I mean, you need a performance ride. And even if you're not a New York parent, if you live in suburbia, you're going to want a stroller that folds really easy and you can throw in the back of
your car. By the way, that little rant you had about Upper East Side, Zabar's rain, you need to clip that and you need to run that on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook against New York City mom demo. Like that little clip right there, I think would be one of your top performance brand performance.
Okay. taking notes, and all they need to do is just follow me in the day in the life of like trying to get my 3-year-old and ingredients and dinner on the table. So, but that's exactly it. So to go back to your question, what is that tension? I think it comes down to, what is your consumer experiencing? How do you create emotional storytelling and high quality content that resonates with the problem that your consumer is wrestling with, and therefore as a brand, the solution that you're offering, and then you put dollars behind it in the spaces that you know that your consumer is the most. So for example, at Bugaboo, we know that late 20 something year old, early 30s, all the way up until now mid 40s, starting to become first time parents, they're spending a lot of time on social media. I know I don't need to tell you this. So that is really where we want to show up, in that part of the consumer journey where they're researching, or they're wondering, hey, what is everyone talking about? What is everyone wearing? The Facebook groups are just like such a wealth of information for that expectant parent that really doesn't know what to do in this new chapter of their life. So I think, you know, just to kind of summarize it, it's one, it's putting the consumer at the center.
Can I jump in here?
Yeah.
One thing we're obsessed at VaynerX land that we don't see people doing in the broader marketing world is consumer at the center. Mm-hmm. To your point, 27-year-old Upper West Side first-time mom, young by New York standards, coming from a third-generation wealthy family, versus 41-year-old first-time mom Upper East Side, coming from the streets, and her husband or her wife have made it. Mm-hmm. Already immediately have a very different psychographic reality.
Yeah.
How, you know, do you find it challenging, like every other brand I speak to every day for the last decade, and especially last 3 years, of not being able to make enough creative at a good enough cost to be able to be relevant to as many different consumer at the center, in my mind, for a brand, even at the size of Bugaboo, which is not Nike or Colgate, but still a big brand.
Yeah.
30, 40, 50, 60 different specific consumer segmentations to make up the customer. But creative is so expensive when you work with agencies or even internally. Is when you think about consumer at the center, do you try to generalize it in one lump, or are you thinking in this cohort consumer segmentation model?
Yeah, it's such a good question. And I think the short answer is that as a brand, if you talk to everybody, you're actually talking to nobody. So you really have to be specific about who is our consumer muse, everything from their age demographic to the other brands that they like. Where do they live? Where do they shop? What are they looking for? So when we are creating content, yes, you create a profile of the consumer that you're speaking to, and that may resonate outside of that, but then you're making sure that you're being really focused. So at Bugaboo, this is the new parent. At Nike, it's the athlete. It's the kid who's trying to start their first run or starting their first basketball game.
The thing I'm fascinated by, the challenge that I perceive you may have and others that are similar, the new parent comes in so many shapes and sizes.
Yeah. But what we're actually finding is that whether to paint that picture, if they're the 27-year-old Upper West Side parent, or they are 40 something and they live in Oklahoma, actually their drivers are the same.
Yeah, and, but to stop them.
Yeah, to stop them scrolling.
To stop them on relevance, to create the consumption of those tried and true, is the thing I'm fascinated by. I couldn't agree with you more. Yeah. Most humans, when you bleed them down, have the similar 10 things. My concern and obsession is getting permission for them to listen requires relevance. And that's where it gets real different of what they need to see and hear.
Yeah. And we struggle with the same thing. How do you stop the scroll?
Yeah.
And
stopping the scroll, as you probably agree, is not just, even though we know it's the dominant force now, that still is TV, that still is a billboard, that still is, like, it's still all of it. Stop the scroll is like a omni battle, right?
Yeah. I got to say, though, whatever your content is, I'm always stopping my scroll because I think you're amazing.
Let's definitely connect. Now that I know you're in New York, I'll ask Andrea to set us up.
100%. Would love that. Thank you for having me, Gary.
I want to give you one more second because I jumped in there a lot because I was fascinated by that. What did we not touch on that you might have wanted to touch on or let people know?
Let's see. Let's just summarize all the great points that we talked about and leave your listeners with some takeaways. So I think all great brands, they actually do understand their consumer really well. Start with the insights. Start with a deep understanding of your consumer mindset. Focus on emotional storytelling. Connect your products into your consumer. And the last thing that I'll say is make sure that you're all scoring off the same scorecard, because make sure that you have the same version of success on what you're trying to do. Because as a marketer, you want to make sure that you align with finance, with sales on what that campaign target is, and just make sure that you have a singular metric of success in order to be successful.
Love it. Thank you, Janelle.
Thank you, Gary.
Thanks, Janelle. All right, Gary, we have another new friend coming up, Kate Lamberton. You might remember that Jim Stengel and Kate authored this incredible article in Harvard Business Review that was all about brandformance. So we've got her here today to lay down all the insights and findings. Welcome, Kate.
Thank you so much. So happy to be here.
Hi, Kate. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm well. I'm super aware. And so I'm going to let you take the floor. You wrote the manifesto. Why don't you give everybody a little bit of your thesis observations, the things you're seeing?
Yeah, it's been really interesting to listen to your prior guests, because I think we're all on the same page. Mm-hmm. From the very opening, where there is no division here, to we need a metric that puts us on the same scorecard. Exactly. Amazing. These people are brilliant and they're doing it in the real world. It was really interesting because I was working a few years ago. I teach, among other things, I teach intro to marketing to Wharton, 1,000 Wharton undergrads a year. And I have this class on brand measurement.
How are the kids today in marketing? Like just for 2 seconds, because this is fascinating to me. Are they overly pot committed to social and not thinking 360? Do they go into the academic environment maybe over indexing on over respecting some of yesterday, even though they're living differently as consumers, something in between, everyone's different? What's the vibe?
I think what's great about them is that they will ask questions about all of it. I mean, they're going to interrogate any claim you put in front of them.
Yeah, and
thank God, right? Because 100%. We've had a couple years of just honestly investment in vapor, right? This is the hot thing. And so what they actually want are frameworks to think through the things, because the things are going to change. They're going to keep changing. And so it's not helpful to have a class on TikTok. What's helpful is to have a class on how media works and how exposure and reach affect behavior. Then whatever the new thing is, they can analyze it.
Do they? Is there one more thing before I let you go? Of course, I completely went against what I said. but I've got you here, and I got to ask, reach. Do you know what bugs the shit out of me?
Tell me something. I'm sure there are a couple things.
There are a couple things, but this is the killer. Reach and not defining it as potential reach and assuming it's actualized reach destroys me. Okay, it destroys me.
It's garbage data in a lot of cases.
It's not meaningful. It's devastating. It completely takes common sense and a pulse of culture off the goddamn table. It kills me. And we talk about it as if it's true.
And this is the kind of thing that I think performance marketers get focused on, because they're given a dashboard and they're supposed to hit these numbers, and it's not a meaningful number. It's just a number. And once you have a number, then you chase it. And I think this actually takes us back to this question of brand, right? Because what that reach means in the context of a strong or ascending brand is completely different than what it means when your brand is in garbage world, right? And so, when we talk about this stuff in research, it's an interaction. The effect of X on Y depends on Z, right? So the effect of reach on any given outcome is going to depend on about 5 different things, maybe 50 different things, in fact. So on its own, it's not a meaningful metric, but it's what gets used to sell a lot. But again, that's what I love about these students. They will interrogate, they will push, they will chase. And I think that's a hopeful sign.
Great. All right, go back to the manifesto.
Okay, so manifesto. So I'm looking for brand measurements. And most of the brand measurements I'm finding, I'm like, how is that manager really useful? Like, that's fine. You can give me a brand ranking. I don't know what to do with it, right? And again, these students are going to push me if I give them something like that. So, 60% of my class is finance majors. And they're like, what is it? How do I put that on a bat? I'm glad that Interbrand can tell me a value and put it on an asset sheet. But how do I then talk to anybody about it? And so I ran across this company that does what I think is actually, I don't want to plug, but I thought they were doing smarter things.
Yeah,
they do smarter things.
What is it? I'm sorry, I didn't catch it.
It's called Bera, B-E-R-A. with brand measurement and tracking and connecting brand measurement to the equity, the measurement of brand equity to both upstream, like upstairs consequences, like things the CFO cares about, and what's happening on the performance side and what's happening on the brand side. And in talking to them, what became apparent was that if you don't have this bridging metric that connects performance to brand, you actually, everybody loses, because brand has an effect on the finance relevant KPIs through its enhancement of best case, what's happening in performance. Performance, if it's being done well, will directly amplify the effect that brand has. The two of them then come into this metric, and actually both of them can be accountable, and both of them can have short and long-term effects that can be captured over time. Right now, what happens is people say performance is short-term and it can be held accountable. Brand is long-term and we just have to wait. Actually not. Actually, both can be accountable. And that's good news because both keep their piece of budget. But you need this bridging brand, this brand equity metric, or it's not really possible.
I talk about it as purple, right? I'm writing a new book and the cover is purple because the thesis is, if using the political structure in the US, which is very contentious, if the world of marketing is red or blue, the magic's in the purple.
Yeah, I mean, and it's also though, I think, still understanding the distinctions, right? I wouldn't want to lose the red and the blue because they do different things, right? And so you have this metric. And so there's, they break it into familiarity, regard, meaning, and uniqueness. And what's nice there is if you capture this and you see, for example, in an older brand, say you're talking about one of these brilliant 200-year-old brands, familiarity is easy.
Regardless,
as ages, you got to build uniqueness, right? So then what you can say is, here's what performance, when we do this performance action, here's how uniqueness is changing. And this is the part of the brand we need to work on. So we need to select the performance that we can show a relationship to uniqueness, because that's where our brand is right now.
Before I lose you, why do you think so many people in modern agencies and brands struggle with relevance at scale?
Oh, because it's very, very hard. I mean, it's incredibly hard. But I think the trick, and I'm not going to say there's an easy answer because there's not for any of this stuff, or we don't have a job, but it's picking the level at which the segmentation operates. For me, what is often underappreciated is that the segmentation criteria that matters the most is the information processing style that's in play at any moment. So when you guys were talking about the Upper East Side, Upper West Side mom, yes, of course. If you're trying to go to, I want to give you an image that specifically resonates with you, yeah, that's tricky. You got to use some behavioral data to match that up. But if what you can say is both of these moms are, when they're wrestling with their bugaboo, emotionally stressed, under time pressure, et cetera, you know a general class of creative that's going to work for them. It's going to be quick hit, simple message.
You know what I love about what you said? I think one of the reasons we were able to excel past the market in social is that is the same philosophy we deploy against the different social networks, because we know the people right now that are consuming something on LinkedIn versus if they were on lunch in their office, LinkedIn versus on lunch TikTok is a different version of themselves.
Yes, exactly. And that's actually what matters. I mean, I can tell you, and I say this all the time, Amazon has no idea who I am, because although I have no children, I've thrown probably a dozen baby showers, because I throw a great baby shower. Right. I don't want babies, but I throw a great baby shower. It is so confused about what I am. I get garbage about, not garbage, I get marketing
stuff that's, no, stuff that's, yeah, stuff that's garbage to your point.
To me, right?
If I get New York Giants stuff, that's garbage to me. Because I'm a Jets fan. You know, so.
But if they understand that I want something funny when I'm scrolling through TikTok, even if it's baby stuff, I might pay attention, because I'm drawn to funny in that moment.
Yep.
But if I'm looking for toothpaste and I'm in an analytical thinking mode, it doesn't matter whether I'm 60 or I'm 20. That's when you can deliver the efficacy stats. So yep. What we have to understand is how people are processing at different moments and make that match. And this is, I do a lot of this in consulting. This is what we do. We analyze the whole journey for processing style. And then you can do something that allows you to tailor at scale. But you know, you have to let go of some assumptions, and you have to kind of back up from some of the really charming and rich work that gets way down into the details. because it can limit your ability to scale, and it can be so wrong.
It can eliminate your ability to scale if the cost of the creative and the hours deployed against it aren't for a meaning enough scale to actually impact your business.
Yep, exactly.
Thank you.
Thank you. Great talking to you.
That was fantastic. Thank you, Gary.
Talk soon. Take it away.